In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Andy Murray, we'll get to heavy metal, we'll get to wrestling, we'll get to all the good things in life. First off, how are you doing?
I'm very well, man. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Thank you very much for hopping on the Untitled Banter podcast.
It's a pleasure.
One of the most improvised podcasts in the land.
Legendary podcast, like around the building and indeed the internet.
Which is a good segue into, I wanted to open the podcast. Usually it's way more freeform than this, but I actually made some notes for the intro before we get to people's questions, talking points, whatever they want us to get to. I did want to shout out everybody who tagged us in Spotify Wrapped stuff, which is on both sides. I should probably say that Andy Murray's from What Culture Wrestling, head of What Culture Wrestling, not just someone I've dragged in.
Who's
called Andy
guy?
Murray. Who's this guy? But I wanted to shout out, and I'd be the same for the wrestling podcast too, the amount of people that tagged us in stuff, and I'm trying to give specific replies to people over on Twitter whenever I can. But yeah, massive thank you to everybody who've been listening. Like, the people being in the top couple percent of listens is incredible. Thousands of minutes listened, etc. Just a massive thank you to everybody for that. It's awesome. I also want to thank everybody for being so awesome with the rotating door of people that I've had on. It takes an army to replace old JB, so it's like we've had a rotating guest, a lot of people on, and then Jules has always got stuff that keeps coming up on a Friday, so he keeps meaning to come back on the Friday show, but this was another week where me and you were talking. I was like, oh, Jules can't make it, and you were like, I can make it, and I was like, well, we could do that. We
like, hell yeah,
that's easy to do. And the last thing is just thanking everybody for all the celebrations of when I put my tweet out saying that I'm going to be a dad next year, which still feels surreal, still doesn't feel like a thing that's actually happening. Like, whenever I keep doing the scans and stuff where I get to see the live feed where it just looks like a weird blurry CCTV footage, but I'm like, that's actually a child in there.
That's a human.
That's actually mine, apparently. It's weird because it's all in like silence. Like, no one told me that. Like, it's just like a silent feed, and it's like, it's all beautiful and everything.
It's but not I'm
like,
speaking. Why no, is it not weird. Saying anything?
But I'm like, it's not waving at me. It's weird. And so like, there's that side of it. But then like it's for me, it wasn't until I like heard the heartbeat where I was like, oh, that got me more. I don't know if it's because I'm more audio wired. But like in general, that was the thing that stood out. But yeah, huge thank you to everybody for seeing for being so absolutely lovely. It's incredible. But yeah, this is the Untitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the UBP, the UBP, which I'll put an echo on, I think, to make that even fancier. Nice. In the edit. But we'll get through as many questions as we can. First one from Night of the Living Podcast, who says the legend Andy Murray makes his debut.
Oh, that's very kind.
He got some lovely fans out there.
Wow.
Andy, please explain to us your Elden Ring experience and character. It's come up so many times on the wrestling pod, but never in detail. Who is the leader of the Bold Community's champion of choice?
Oh my goodness gracious me.
The hashtag Bold Community.
So I'm a basic boy when I play I love Elden Ring. It might be my favorite game ever, actually.
Right.
Like, after this most recent playthrough that I just completed, and before going on to the brand new hot game of the summer, Hades, you might have heard of it.
I said one little quick segue there is that I feel like this year has been like overwhelming in terms of people telling you there's tons of stuff to play. But I have a theory, and I did like a Twitter poll a couple months back being like, how many people are actually keeping up with all the stuff? And most people aren't. Like, most people are like sticking to like two or three, five, whatever games out of the 60 that are on offer. So I think most people are going to be in line with you anyway, picking up old classics or whatever.
That's it. Like, I own Armored Core 6 and Diablo 4. I just haven't played them yet.
You don't need to play Diablo 4. You're okay.
I own it, so I probably, you know, money was spent.
Is it a physical one? Can you get rid of it if it's not?
Yeah,
good?
So if it sucks, I could, you know, stick it on the old internet or whatever.
Because they've monetized the living words out of that. It's got a great intro, though.
I'll save it for a time when I'm in a good mood. Right, I'm feeling very forgiven.
To bring you back down again.
But Elden Ring, man, that when it came out, it consumed my life. Mm-hmm. And I did a whole playthrough. I did another one that winter, and I was just playing various games this summer, and I was like, nothing is making me feel as good or like as fulfilled gaming-wise as Elden Ring did, so I'm going to do a whole other playthrough. I'm totally basic, and the hardcore FromSoft people out there are going to sneer at me and probably turn this podcast off. I play basic builds because I'm a loser.
You'll be way common. I mean, I'm more of a melee guy anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I remember... You played through the original Dark Souls?
Yes, yeah.
I remember struggling that's the thing. I remember struggling so much with Ornstein and Smaug, but it was because I was just a basic melee build. And back then, 2013, 2014, I refused... Actually, no, first Dark Souls is like 2012 or whatever. But I refused to let... It's probably 2011, now that my brain kicks in. Anyway, I refused to summon anyone because I was just like, no, I need to do it solo.
I'm a true gamer.
Yeah, I'm like, what even am I if I can't do this myself? Which is absolute BS. The whole point of those games is to, you know, it's the embodiment of the Zelda thing of like, it's not safe... bring someone else in. But I forced a melee build all the way through most of those games. And I remember one of my friends, I was like talking about how impossible Ornstein and Smaug was. And he was like, oh, I did it first time. I was a mage. I just pinged him from across the map, killed him in a couple of hits. I was like, okay, great. Well, I guess I should probably be a mage then. But sword play is way more fun.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I did the same in Dark Souls 1. I was a sword and shield guy. I was like, I might as well have a basic play style so that I can like learn the mechanics. Mm-hmm. And then I got some pyromancies and stuff so I could have a bit of diversity. But yeah, Ornstein and Smaug. I had to summon Solaire for that because Jesus Fenton.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And those flipping archers, man. Elden Ring, the first playthrough I did a Moonvale build, which is one of the famous early broken weapons with transient moonlight, this weapon art that staggers people in like a hit.
Oh, cool.
And it's like, it made it a little bit easier for my idiot brain to cope with early on. But I was like a spell sword as well, so I had the sorceries from Raya Lucaria and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. My second build, I did a dual-wield twin blade.
Shout.
So I had two twin blades.
Nice.
I had the gargoyle twin blade and like some generic one. So like I was doing jump attacks that hit people four times. So it was just like a bleed build. Like people will hate that because it's really basic. But
no, man, the bleed thing. I remember when me and Josh first went through it on the podcast back then and it was like bleed damage was the thing.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if you played the...
It was the big time.
Yeah. Like I don't know if you played the South Park, the Stick of Truth game, but that game had fart damage that was just like if you combined the fart damage with the burn damage, that was like a cheat code. And it's like sometimes RPGs just have that one stat, and Elden Rings was definitely the blood stat.
Oh, 100%. The blood loss stuff was insane. Uh-huh. And then for this last playthrough, I decided to go full caveman.
Right.
And get the giant crusher, the massive hammer.
Oh, yeah.
So the comedically huge thing you see people walking around with, and the lion claw weapon art, so you can just like mangle people. The build was like everything in strength and endurance and vitality and nothing else.
See, those builds, like it's when fun. I never like the how much that slows you down. Like I want to get out the way. I want to play like more agile. But when you hit with those things, it's like a 10-ton truck.
Yeah,
like,
it just runs great. You over, man.
But, yeah.
Like, no, I love the game. Like I love that I can play through it. I must have played like 200 hours of it.
Right.
And I love that I can still play through and find new areas and stuff. So this time I didn't even realize that Dragon Lord Placidusax was a boss.
Nice.
And then I was like, how have I found this? I've played this game through twice. Like it's totally optional.
Because you've got to go like outside one of the maps and lie on like a stone and it takes you through time and then you can fight him. Like okay,
lie in this coffin and go to a lake of rot.
Yeah.
Placidusax is in.
Am I thinking of a different dude?
Farmazula,
the guy with the twin heads. There's a dragon with like three.
No,
heads
that is the one. That is the one. You've maybe just got the journey.
Like, yeah.
But yeah, you get to him through like a crazy bit at the bottom of Farmazula, and it's like, well, I didn't know this existed because you're in from where you can like the nearest bonfire to him before you get there. I think is the one on the Great Bridge. You go up to fight Malekith and the tree sentinel thing in front of his door. So you're automatically drawn to that.
Yes.
I didn't think to go down again.
No, well, I mean, like
it was crazy.
The way that thing like unveils itself, where it's like the whole idea of the map being like concentric circles outwards. It's almost like a big bullseye getting bigger and bigger. I got so consumed by just the open world, the on top stuff. Yeah. Like I did find the underground within like 15 minutes, but I was like, oh, that must just be like a dungeon.
Yeah.
And you only realize over time that like, no, it's like, it's a layered thing. Like it's two open worlds on top of each other, which like was a weird thing to try and track in your own mind anyway. Like
it's
what
like an orange
what?
Peel.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Ring.
One big spirally thing. That was one of the best, like that whole run, I miss games that are so big that it feels like everyone's playing, like even casual gamers, whoever, like everyone's playing through it and everyone's comparing notes and like, oh, have you seen this and whatever.
Yeah.
There's not been a game like that this year. Like Elden Ring was the last one of them, like where it really brought everybody in, and which is insane because this year has had a ton of big games. I feel like Zelda had a lot of people talking, but unless you had a Switch, you're not going to be getting it. But Elden Ring was just that big vacuum where it was like, you need to know what's up with
this
game.
It's an event, isn't it? And then, like, I love any game as well where the lore is so deep and interesting that you can go and watch Vatividia and like hundreds of other channels who somehow have like a million views, but the content is amazing quality. I'd say somehow because there's so many of these channels that do great stuff.
Souls is like its own little cottage industry. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's like ever since the games blew up so much, it's like they, like I said, shout out to Vatividia, like the absolute king of that stuff.
ASMR, so his videos are ASMR. Yeah. The voice is so smooth.
Dude's incredibly well put together.
He is.
A question from Harry Paulett who says, if you haven't already, check out Buried Tomorrow, my favorite band of all time. Absolutely brutal and beautiful at the same time. Absolutely love those guys and best live performances I've seen in a long time. What bands are you into recently? Love you both. Take care.
Wow, I've heard of Buried Tomorrow. I think they played Newcastle quite recently.
I like Buried Tomorrow quite a lot. I sort of, I didn't get into them when they first came on the scene. I remember them when Metal Hammer first, like when they first came on the scene, and it was like they had two vocalists.
Yeah,
where it was like one screamy dude, one clean guy, and they were just really chunky and heavy and everything. But I got into them on the Black Flame album. Which that was their big one that like blew up, where Black Flame was a lot more like accessible and melodic and stuff. And then their most recent one, I forget what it's called, but they had another one, had like a song called The Grey and stuff on, and Choke, I think was the name of the album.
Choke.
But like, yeah, did you listen to that song?
No, it's
hilariously, that is the chorus.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Choke.
It's just him going like a big riff then going choke, and it just kicks back
out. Hell yeah, brother. That's what it's all about.
But yeah, I was like, I've been a big fan of their most recent stuff, even though I can't remember the name of it. But yeah, Buried Tomorrow was solid. I remember them being held up as like what Bullet of My Valentine could have been if Bullet were just better
if they hadn't wet the bed
just a little bit. But yeah, in terms of what bands are you into recently, we just did our Spotify Wrapped stuff, but do you want to shout anyone out?
I've been doing like as well as keeping on top of some new stuff, which I always like to do. I always like to discover new stuff. This year I've spent the past few months doing like discography revisits for three foundational bands for me, Machine Head, Crowbar, and Sepultura. So what I do is, it's really nerdy, but I love it. I start at the beginning of their discographies and I go artist about. So I listen to the first Crowbar album for like or just until I'm tired of it, really, for like a week or whatever. And then I listen to the first Machine Head album, and then I listen to the first goodness gracious me, Sepultura, Crowbar, Machine Head. Yeah. So I kind of go through them in order, and then I go on to their second ones in order. And it's really cool because it keeps it varied. And it means like I'm not just listening to Machine Head for like 3 months and nothing else. So I've been doing that. It's been a really interesting, like, a really interesting experiment, because like Machine Head start with an incredible album, Burn My Eyes.
Yep.
It's like, you could argue that that's the best metal album of the 90s. I'm not sure if I would. I might.
That's an interesting shout.
It's phenomenal.
And what did Pantera have out in the 90s? Was effing hostile in the 90s?
Literally everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it's really tough. It's tough to think about, right? Because like Pantera have like 3 classic albums in a row.
It's up there though.
But like Machine Head start off so hot. And second album, The Morphing Change, still good, but you can kind of feel it drifting into like rap metal territory.
I was just saying, when did he get his cornrows and we got all that stuff?
That was The Burning Red, brother. Right. So that's their third album. And it's like, oh boy, I'm not sure.
Robert?
Some, you know, there's a couple tracks on there, but like, there's a lot of that, you know, him rapping.
I mean, look, like, I don't know about you, but I grew up as a Limp Bizkit fan, as a Saliva, a POD fan.
I love Limp Bizkit.
I can get down with that stuff. I love all that stuff.
Me too. And like, honestly, I actually think the rap tracks on the album are the best songs on the album, dare I say. But then after that, like Machine Head, they release Supercharger, which is a disaster of an album. Then they kind of come back around, Ashes of Empires, really good, really good. The Blackening classic, in my opinion, Locust.
That's one of the best metal albums of all time.
I agree.
Like, by far, yeah.
Yeah, like you could argue that, that they have the best metal album of the 90s and the best metal album of the 2000s, right? Like, not many bands can say that, but then they have Catharsis.
Which me and you thought was hilarious when that thing landed. Because there's a few things over the years where they try and bring back that the 90s attitude and put it with the newer compositions, the newer like instrumental approach and everything. But then you got songs like Game Over or stuff like Catharsis, where it's like, it's aggro.
The one from the point of view of Lemmy is so cringe, man.
I don't even know which one that is.
It's like beard smelling of snatch is oh, one of the God. Lines. Yeah, it's like,
I haven't thought about that lyric in years.
Robert. But yeah, like it's been interesting. And like Sepultura is an interesting one as well, because mm-hmm. their first album came out when they were literally 15 years old and they couldn't play their instruments.
Right.
So it's like all, it's not, the guitar isn't tuned properly. Like Igor can barely play the drums. He's just sitting there going boom, 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 boom. Max can't do anything. So it's like,
I love stuff like that.
It's really interesting. It sounds like it was recorded in a toilet.
Yeah.
And like Morbid Visions and Bestial Decimation. They re-recorded them and re-released them this year, which is really interesting.
Right, okay,
but it's
cool.
Like got like a charm to it. It's yeah. like these kids, but they grow and then they release three bangers in a row in Beneath the Remains, Arise and Chaos AD. And then Roots is like a controversial pick because it's got like Rata Mahata on it and Roots, Bloody Roots.
That's, that was like their first big single or whatever, the first thing that broke through.
That's how I discovered them actually, seeing Same. Rata Mahata on Kerrang,
right.
which is just a fun song
with
a good riff. But they kind of tail off after that. And then Crowbar, to me, is like, first album, they're kind of finding their voice. Like, it's a good album, but Kirk hasn't really figured out how he wants to sing.
Mm.
Like, the riffs aren't quite there yet. Mm. And then after that, they just don't miss. It's
right.
like, after that, the minimal quality level is, like, very good.
Mm.
And it's just a fun time throughout. But, like, in terms of new bands I've been listening to, I can give some recommendations for
yep.
sure. I've been mostly into hardcore these past few years, which has always been part of my music taste. But in the past few years, it's kind of taken over.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like really ignorant, like no BS stuff where all the lyrics are about like getting stabbed in the back and like the riffs are really chunky and bouncy and fun. Pain of Truth is a fun one to check
right.
out.
Uh-huh.
They released their debut full length album this year, but they've got an EP or a demo out as well. And like a split here and there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like just really silly, fun, like, punch you in the face kind of music.
I love, because that was what I used to love about Canterbats. Like,
yeah.
I know they're still going, but like that whole era when the Old Blood came out, that was when I saw them live, and it was just yeah. in a tiny little, I saw them a few times, but one of the first times was just in, there's a little place called the O2 Academy in Newcastle, and it was in the upstairs bit, which is a very like sweaty, small wooden
yeah,
room.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we saw them in there where they was bouncing off the walls and everyone's just having a great time. I met Liam Cormier after the gig. The singer, but like that energy, when you can nail that, when
yeah.
like the band fully knows how self-aware they are or whatever, which isn't the thing that Machine Head has, like
yeah,
you can have so much fun with it.
Certainly not with Rob. It makes you want to jump in the pit even before you're 36 and you have to work on YouTube all day and you don't want to get smacked in the eye and have a black eye.
No.
But yeah, no, they're probably my album of the year as
right.
well.
I want to ask where you come down on Sleep Token.
Yeah, it's not really for me, but like I appreciate the creativity and like I think it's really cool when something that weird connects with so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Like it speaks to, this is quite a cynical way of looking at it, but it speaks to their marketing and it speaks to like how they've presented themselves and like how they've had, and again, like it, like I respect it more than like it.
Right.
But like to combine such like disparate elements of music into one like kind of theatrical riffy thing with these like crazy melodies and stuff.
I mean, like Ewan calls it George Ezra with riffs.
That's
which,
pretty
like,
good.
Which is fair enough. I love Sleep Token. That was one of the things where they didn't click with me for the first two albums.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's fine. I get what he's going for. But I kind of had the Ezra modern radio song like thing where I was like, it just sounds like something from the radio
yeah.
where I couldn't get it.
And then they go, down.
Yeah, and, like, and I was always more into that. And then it was like when, I remember when The Summoning came out, which the first single or whatever from the newest album was like, oh, this is it. Like
yeah.
they've arrived kind of thing. And that album blew up. And like you said, with the marketing or the release stuff, they figured out how to game, if it was how intentional it was or whatever, Spotify's algorithms, because
yeah.
they had a new single every week and they skyrocketed. They sold
yeah.
out arenas and then they were like, okay, we finally arrived. And like they are by far like the biggest band, at least in like mainstream metal.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're on the Metal Hammer front cover and everything. But yeah, they massively clicked. Like, if I'm doing like newer bands to check out, Sleep Token's by far the thing I've listened to the most. That thing dominated my Spotify Wrapped. But it's the three P's for me. It's Periphery, Polaris, and Polyphia.
Prog.
Yeah, just Prog. But like Polaris, I think.
I love it.
It's funny because like this is the second time I'm mentioning like what Bullet could have been.
Yeah.
And it's like, but I love the foundations of the metalcore scene. Like I was there when it started. I have such a soft spot for those early Bullet albums, and I like the tenacity.
Yeah.
Of metalcore
yeah.
done well. Polaris are incredible. And they're an Australian metalcore band, just super crunchy, kind of have like some of the hardcore stuff in there as well, but nice and melodic and whatever. Polyphia has Tim Henson, which is one of the best guitarists on the planet, like next to mm-hmm. you know John Mayer.
I see him a lot on YouTube.
Yeah, he's just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like just a dude who's been playing guitar since he was tiny, and
yeah.
you can tell. And that song with him and Steve Vai is like if you're like someone who just worships guitar players.
You want some shred.
Yeah, you want some shred, but it's like melodic. you've got a lot of that more modern progressive stuff where it's just like lots of crazy tapping and whatever. That stuff's awesome. And then Periphery have been my favorite band since I listened to Periphery 3. 5 came out this year. They just named their albums after the numbers.
Yeah.
But this album was called Genters Not a Genre, which is a fun to that thing. Because when they first came out, like Periphery 1 and 2, they were like the poster boys or whatever of the Genter movement, the De Gent movement, which didn't stick around. Like that kind of went away because it was like Gent's just a guitar tone.
It's It's just like a word for a guitar that goes
it's down tuned.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when Disturbs had a Gent song. There was a riff on the album that came out that year where it was like that kind of squelchy guitar tone. Yeah. I was like, oh, Disturbed did a Gent song. And I was like, no, they changed the guitar tone. Like,
covered Meshuggah or something.
Yeah, exactly. like Meshuggah was like one of the foundational things as well. But it's like, yeah, so for me, it's like the three P's have dominated because they all have new albums. And I cannot recommend Polyphia enough. They've been on the rise for a while. Yeah. But I feel like they arrived this year as well. But yeah, overall, music's pretty damn good.
I like that balance as well, right? Mm. Because I'm just looking at my most listened to list on my phone here. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I do like that balance because it sounds to me like since we met in 2017, your music taste maybe gone like a bit more progressive perhaps. And like a bit more like aligned to things like that, which are really inventive and creative and like technical. Yeah. And
it's not just Alter Bridge is what you're saying. which I feel.
But like incorporating like melodies into that and stuff. Whereas mine's kind of devolved.
Right.
devolved. I just like when the guitar goes dun, dun, dun now. So it's like I look at my list and it's all like, honestly, it's pure meathead
like
music.
Sludge. Well, yeah. me and you, and not to make it an entire music podcast, but we could.
I'm game.
Yeah, we've got as long in here until they kick us out. But me and you talk a lot about melody. Like the implication of melody in songs. And like for me, like I and me and Josh talk about this loads, and same with me and my wife and everything. I do not care what someone's saying unless it's something horrible, but for the most part I don't care about lyrics. I'm all about melody, harmony, instrumentation, composition. I really don't care about the lyrical content, so like I'm there for whatever the vocal hook is or the melodic hook or whatever. And then I like some of the like I love aggression in music, like whatever it is. But me and you talk about melody, where I remember you might have changed over the years, but when me and you used to talk about music, you would say like that kind of like I'm singing and it's this thing, like that would like put you off. Like I like a big cheesy rock song as much as I love everything else.
I'm kind of that's it, like that's the different tastes, isn't it, kicking in? Because I'd say like when it comes to music, I look more for rhythms and stuff. And maybe it's because I was like a really big hip-hop fan for like, I still am.
Oh, I had such a rap face.
Yeah, man, me too. Like, you know, it's still part of my life, but like, it's not my main genre anymore. Mm. Where the appeal there is like the beat and like how the rapper is going over like their flow and how that marries. And it's all very rhythmic. It's not like, so maybe that informed my taste a little bit, but I look more for like the rhythms and stuff.
Like,
The really primitive way to ask the question is, can I throw a spin kick to this? You know, can I windmill
crab core to this?
Can I windmill to this, or what's going on here?
So that'll be a phenomenal name for an album or a band. Can I windmill to this? just bring back that whole scene.
An ironic spin kick. I love all that stuff. I love hardcore. I love like really low and chuggy dun, dun, dun silliness.
I don't know if you find as well that like, because we do a lot of writing, we do a lot of presenting and stuff, like there's sometimes when you just need to make a cocoon and just do some work or whatever, like if you're in the office or whatever. I love making I kind of imagine it as like a tunnel of noise, like giving the most abrasive,
definitely,
screamy stuff, because that blocks everything out.
Definitely.
And it's like, the assumption is like, oh, wouldn't that be distracting? And it's like, not if you love the artist or the album. Yeah, there's something about that it helps.
It drives you on. Yeah. Like me and Michael Sidgwick of What Culture Wrestling have this conversation quite a bit, where I'm like, he can't work to like super fast aggressive music, whereas me, it gets me in a flow and it keeps me going. But like I have two ways of doing it. Like if I'm listening on headphones, I like that cocoon because the headphones are really personal and it's like, it's in your head.
I love like shutting the world out.
Yeah,
the headphones on.
And it's like I'm doing some like fast work. But like if I'm listening on speakers, I go the opposite way and I like some like droney stuff. You know, like some like atmospheric, almost like white noise. It's a really strange approach, but I feel like that works when it's a bit more distant on the speakers and it like fills the room. So it's like, yeah, it's a whole thing that I'm still figuring out.
Well, I mean, I got massively into, I don't know if it's like necessarily a name, but like ambient synthwave. Like I love synthwave, I love lo-fi, anything like electronic or whatever. I don't have any specific artists to shout out. I can't think of the one that I'm trying to remember. It's something like something about Over the Horizon or whatever, which is vague AF. But I remember like discovering this whole genre of ostensibly just sci-fi background music, which is like, it sounds a lot like The Blade Runner soundtrack, or it sounds like
things
like that, where it's just kind of ambient stuff that might play in the background when a character's walking through a neon city with the collars up, the high collars up on the long coat, and they're just thinking about what humanity means in a city. And I'm like, I love all that stuff.
Yeah.
I love all that, like, I love philosophy stuff. I love that sort of, what even is humanity kind of thing. I love all that stuff. So I got kind of into having those almost like background music on. And like, yeah, stuff like that can be not necessarily immediately provocative or anything, but relaxing.
Yeah, definitely.
Just, I always have something on in the background. Because I got my, you know, when we got our numbers through Spotify Wrapped,
yeah.
I thought mine would be like hundreds of thousands of numbers. It was like, minutes, I mean. It was, I think mine was like 45,000 minutes.
Yeah.
Which isn't that high, really. I've seen people have like 80,000, 90,000.
I think Nicholas had over 100.
Right.
And I was like, man, I thought I was doing good with like 52.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, because you still, you think like, oh, I listen to this stuff all day, every day. But yeah. Question from Jack Jingle, who says, well, it'd be rude to not do a bit of wrestling. So, favorite wrestling game of all time, SmackDown, Just Bring It, brings back fond memories, as that's how I convinced my mum to get me a PlayStation 2. And we also had You Don't Messed Up Aaron. Say, what is the worst wrestling game as well?
Oh, God.
You Done Messed Up Aaron. Sorry, I get your name wrong even though I said it hundreds of times at this point.
Probably my favorite is SmackDown 2.
Oh, yeah?
I think I wouldn't ever make the argument that it's the best or whatever, but like it was
the warmest memories.
Yeah, it's the one I played the most because when the SmackDown series started, I got the first one on PS1 mm-hmm. and like I had a great time with it. But then when SmackDown 2 came out, I believe, was it Know Your Role?
Know Your Roles 2.
Yeah, that was the subtitle for it.
Yeah, man.
It was such a huge advancement from the first one, and it was so much more customizable. Mm-hmm. Like in SmackDown 1, you had like 20 heads and 20 bodies, and you had to kind of fit them together.
Like the new AEW game?
Yeah.
He has seven heads.
Yeah, it's like, hey, this has got 30 minutes of gameplay in it. But yeah, it's definitely that. Like you could powerbomb people off the cell, you know? Like,
oh, dude.
How can you not love that?
Because I had one of my mates had SmackDown 1 and we played it at his house and then SmackDown 2 came out. So I just bought that. And then it was like, yeah, SmackDown 2 was a massive step up. Like,
yeah,
I played the campaign mode, story mode over and over again.
Yeah.
Like it had that really cool, and it didn't sync up in terms of how many choices it was monitoring, but it had that multiplayer story mode mm-hmm. where up to four characters or players could enter the story and it would try and pit you off against each other.
Yeah.
Or you might do little backstage segments where like Michael Cole would interview you and you'd call people out or whatever and then he would shrug and they would walk away and like I loved that approach. They never really fleshed it out. But SmackDown 2, like you said, like it had the arcade gameplay, the story stuff, the creation suite.
Putting people through the cell.
Oh god.
Yeah.
Doing that animation where it was the same animation regardless of whatever
every
move
time.
Put them through, they just hang and then they drop or whatever. That stuff was really cool. I remember like this is how old I am, printing out the creator wrestler codes.
Yes.
To be able to like go and
from
make
Game Facts.
Yeah, yeah, from Game Facts
like that.
To like be able to like make the roster that wasn't there anymore, which you know was one of the coolest things. For the worst wrestling game, I got out of wrestling back in like 2004 or 5 or whatever, and I remember that I still got the games because they played so well, but I didn't care about
them. They're all great. Like Here Comes the Pain.
Yeah, Here Comes the Pain would be my shout for the best one. However, like the last two, this I don't know if it was this year or last year, but WWE 2K23 and WWE 2K22, they are humongous returns to form. Like I love these two new games. Like I only just got 2K23 because I wasn't going to pay like the full price for it, but I traded 22 in because they shut the servers off, so you have to get the new one if you want to still download stuff. And I was like, I want Hangman Page in
That's
my WWE game.
Really scummy behavior, isn't
so
it?
It's just like, yeah, if you want to be able to access this stuff, you got to get the new one. But I love the new systems they've got in this. Like there's like momentum stuff, you can bank like the ability to kick out of a pin regardless of how crushed you are, so you can create all these like dynamic in the moment moments that like really really work for the crowd and like the energy of a match, and like I really like the new one.
In the market for investment worthy bags, watches and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
And I think, like, obviously I'm filling it full of AEW people because I don't care about WWE, but the mechanics of what is there is built towards the genuine reality of putting a match on. Yeah. I think that is a really rare thing in video, in most of the wrestling games.
Wrestling is a really difficult thing to capture in, like, these simulation-y style games in particular. You can make an arcade game. You can simplify it to that point and just focus on really cool gameplay. Mm-hmm. And you can have things like Fire Pro as well, which are
really, Fire Pro rules.
Yeah, really fun and intricate. But, like, I think where they went wrong over the past, and this isn't really it's not an original thought. Mm-hmm. Loads of people have said this before me, but was trying to make it too simulation-y and boring-y. Mm-hmm. And, like, if you want to hit a pile driver, I have to press 7 different buttons. And right. It's like, nah, just let me hit the move. So, like,
the pace is quite slow for a while as well. Yeah, it does have sure. a very, even the new ones have a very, like, deliberate pace, you would call it. But, like, I think it comes together a lot better than the new AEW game does.
Yeah, I did not enjoy fighting.
No, it's like, I kind of tried to force myself to do it. And I think that there are positives to it. But yeah, the reason I mentioned those newer games is because when I was thinking about the worst one, like I said, I got out of wrestling back when, you know, like mid-2000s, early-2000s. Still kept up with the SmackDown versus Raw games for a bit, and then I just stopped getting them. Do you remember when they changed the how you grapple? They put it on the right stick.
Yes.
I remember hating that, and I was just like, I want to do stuff with the face buttons. And so I kind of dropped off. But all of this is to say that when they did 2K19, I think, was the really stupidly broken one.
That was the one I was going to say.
Right,
I know it's like a basic answer, but
it was
how
so big,
how
obvious,
could
though.
It be anything else, you know?
Like, there was some, like, choices over the years where it's like, you know, maybe it's not the feel that you wanted, but that was the most broken one. Where they had to actually take some years off. And I remember, I forget the name of the dude who worked on it, who took to YouTube and was like, this is the reality of what we're doing. You know, we're being rushed through this stuff and I've left the project and everything. I think the worst one by far is one of them, like, outside of personal taste. But SmackDown is a shout, especially SmackDown 2.
Definitely.
Question from Tanakuts, who says, Andy, I know you're a Souls guy based on your love for Elden Ring, but have you played any other Souls/Souls-likes, and what are your favorites? Also, which wrestler would make the best Souls character?
Oh, interesting. So, I started with Dark Souls. Mm-hmm. Years ago, I got, like, a secondhand copy off eBay, maybe like a year after it came out. Didn't get into it. Mm-hmm. But I thought it sounded really interesting, like the combination of the deep lore, interconnected world, like difficulty that kind of rewards you for learning stuff and you have to adjust based on your mistake. I was like, oh, that sounds like a really old school gaming experience. It took me a long time to get into it, and I didn't actually get into it until the remastered came out, and then they fixed Blight Town and stuff like that, obviously. And then
only Real OGs did it at 3 frames a second.
Yeah, I've seen the footage of just sludge slowly chugging away.
I mentioned earlier on about the whole old gamer brain thing. That's how poisoned I was when I was going through that level, going like, no, this is the real experience.
Yeah.
It's just terrible. Flipbook frame rate, it's terrible.
Yeah, if you played the remaster, you're a wimp.
Yeah, exactly.
But I really got into the remaster actually in the pandemic. So I'd owned it for a while. And then I was like, hey, look, I've got nothing else to do. I'm going to play this.
Right.
And I loved it. Since then, I have obviously played Elden Ring several times. I have started... I got about halfway through Dark Souls 2, and then Elden Ring came out. And that
2's kind of, the weak one anyway.
Yeah, I've heard it's kind of... Like, I've enjoyed my experience with it, but it's not quite got the interconnected world and stuff that I love. Like, I love the feeling of coming out of a door and you're right back at the start, and you're like, what the hell? How did that come together? And you have a lot of that in the original Dark Souls.
Did you not play Bloodborne? Or like the other FromSoft stuff?
No, well, I started Bloodborne, but I was too scared.
Right. It's so very full on.
Yeah, I'll probably go back to it at some point. I do want to play them all at some point. And I've also started Demon Souls, the remake, but I didn't quite click.
I didn't like Demons. It just, because it's like, they remade it so faithfully. And obviously, it's the progenitor. It's the one that gave into Dark Souls over time.
Yeah.
And it was like, to me, it felt like that. It was like, oh, all these things got better over time. Yeah. All these boss designs and everything else. I know people love Demons, but to me, there's a reason the Souls franchise didn't take off till Dark Souls. Because Demons is a cool bunch of ideas, but they didn't coalesce until later.
Didn't quite come together.
Yeah, I wouldn't have said so.
So like, I'm going to play all of these games all the way through. But it will take me a while.
Yeah.
But I've played most of them is the short answer. And what wrestler would make the best character? My God, it's got to be someone a bit glum.
I was going to think like House of Black style. Like, I was like, do you put Malachi in there?
Yeah, he could be like, he'd be really good as one of the guys who like absolves your sins.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You could have, you could have like someone who, because I initially was thinking like big brooding boss character. So I was like, well, who would have like a big evil cackling laugh or something? And then like Brody King or whatever. But yeah, I wonder if you get like someone who's more like Swerve, like the new version of Swerve that we have. That could kind of fit in.
What about Luchasaurus could be Rykard? If new, they're lizards.
The new Luchasaurus where he's all evil and stuff.
Yeah.
Like maybe that could be a thing, but the whole kill switch approach is a bit of a mess anyway. Next question is from Darren Roberts, who says, UBP, with the Game Awards coming up, I'm sure you're all discussing the game of the year, but what's your meal of the year? Cast your mind back. What's the best grub that you've got your hands on this year? Now, I thought this would be a fun excuse to shout out your better half, Rebecca, because you guys just tried the Greg's Bistro thing.
We did.
In Newcastle, which I don't know what that's like in reality, but it's like a weird fancy version of Greg's.
Yeah, it's a sit-down restaurant version of Greg's that's in the Fennec department store. So if you're not from Newcastle, Fennec is like, it's a really upmarket, posh kind of, it's really good. Like they've got a really nice food court and stuff. But Greg's is obviously, it's your chain bakery.
I love Greg's. I feel like I have like a weird hometown pride for Greg's because like a Northeast chain. But when
you're sipping from a Greg's
I'm drinking Greg's right now.
This second.
Mr. Greg. But when they did that bistro thing where it's like, we're going to take our pasties, we're going to take our pastry bakes for the people around the world and put them, try and pretend that they're like a full meal. I was like, that gets me in, but I'm curious what the hell that is.
It was awesome. So shout outs to Greg's for inviting us along. But
I should say that What Culture's not actually sponsored. But Greg's is good. I like Greg's.
Yeah, so it was like we sat down and we had the starters were a sausage roll with some like pickled veg and stuff, like pickled carrots, pickled peas, and really nice, really high quality vegetables. And then they had the vegan option as well with the vegan sausage roll. And then the main course was a festive bake, which for people who don't know is a pastry filled with turkey stuffing, cranberry sauce, and I think there's gravy in there as well. I think
in the bistro version it's got like roasties on the side and stuff.
Yeah, roast potatoes, and there was some like some kind of veg with it as well. It was absolutely delicious. I think it's only in here for a month, but if you're in or around Newcastle and you want something weird and fun, I would do it.
Because I mentioned that as like an inroad into how much of like food you've had this year. Like, because obviously like the amount of different things that you and your partner check out, like it's there something that you want to shout out in particular?
So for context, my partner is, she's like a food blogger here in Newcastle on TikTok. Newcastle Lass, you can follow her if you want. She makes loads of great videos and it gets her lots of great opportunities. So we have good meals all the time. I feel really privileged and spoiled, but
it's honestly, man, watching either your or her feed, I'm like, well, I'm gonna go there next week. Okay, I'm gonna go there next
and
week.
And it's like you got a list of like 50 places you can't possibly keep up. But like some of the favorite meals I've had this year, there's a place called Pigolo's out in North Shields. And look, full disclosure, we're kind of friends with the owner, so we're a bit biased, but they do like really nice, just messy burgers. Yep. Like if you like piles of stuff, that is all bad for you and all delicious. Their food is incredible. In the summer, we went to there's a classic Newcastle restaurant, Blackfriars. That does like it's not quite like fine cuisine or whatever. Like, it's not posh, silly.
It's a bit more upmarket than than a Greg's.
It is a bit upmarket, but it's not like pretentious. No. You know, like the food's really good. Mm. And they did a summer barbecue this year that was incredible, where it was like elevated barbecue food.
Right.
So I recommend that. But we eat good all the time. I love McDonald's. I'm not fussy.
Oh, dude, you know? I just love food. I was thinking, because this is such a wider thought on this, but you know how like there's the cost of living crisis, there's inflation everywhere, like there's the sort of collapse of the streaming market, all the entertainment mediums are struggling to find out what everybody wants. Food seems like the one thing that has just punched through all of that. It's like, you can't 3D print this, you can't digitize, you can't download it, you've got to go to these places. And I feel like, at least in the Northeast, at least in Newcastle, and then to what, you know, Gateshead and the coast and everything, I feel like the bar has been raised, where you've got many great food places now. Like, it's like Newcastle's become way more of a foodie city than it ever was before.
It's crazy. Like, we feel like we go a different place every week, and we still haven't scratched the surface. Mm-hmm. It's a mental place.
Just tons. I'm going to shout out, because I live over on the coast in Monkseaton, which is more towards the eastern side of the country. And there's a couple pubs that have just like either been overhauled or have been going for a long time. There's the Beehive pub, which I shout out, and there's the Tavern and Galley. They're both phenomenal.
Much different to the Beehive in Newcastle City Centre.
What's
which,
that?
Oh, you do not want to go there.
No, we should just not tell people, then you've got to pick one. It's like a 50-50 split. Flip a coin and see which one you get. Question from Steve, who says, CM Punk, Randy Orton, MJF, blah, blah, blah. Can we talk about how good Julia Hart is? Best entrance, best submission, best look. A star already, and she's super young. Also, Hulk Hogan says, are Swerve and Hangman legacy rivals now? This is a very specific wrestling question, then we'll get back to other things. But
I love it.
On this?
Yeah, Julia deserves her flowers for sure.
What do you think of her new outfit? I like her black one more.
Yeah, I like the creativity of just messing with different gear, and I love the selection of hats.
The hat's incredible.
Tremendous. The one with the little red windows almost around the brim.
I forget the name of the person who makes that hat, but I think it's on Etsy. Like, her store blew up, and it's like people trying to order their own.
I want the Julia
hats.
Hat. Yeah. No, I think it's awesome. Like, her glow up has been really tremendous, because she came into AEW with the cheerleader character, and it was a good fit with the Varsity Blondes, but it wasn't really going anywhere because Brian Pillman Jr. is
I watched a little clip of him over on WWE, and it's like bless him, you're getting stuck in, but it doesn't seem like it's taking off.
Yeah, he's all right, but he's not like. I don't think he's going to headline WrestleMania, put it that way. Maybe not at that level. And Griff Garrison's a good wrestler, but it wasn't really going to blow up or whatever. And then she did the transitioning storyline, going dark into the House of Black. I love the House of Black. They're my favorites.
Same. Yep.
My absolute favorites. Mm-hmm. And it was like, the story was just, it was a little bit drawn out. It was like the mist in the eyes.
It took forever.
Yeah, it did. It took like half a year.
And what do you do? She's like sat on the edge of the ring. She's been like misted in the eye. It's like, okay, we get it. Like, she's getting there.
Yeah, but then when she got there, it was like, okay, this works. This works. She's she found herself. She became a bit nastier in the ring. The submission is really awesome, like you say. Mm. I really love the ring entrance with the music by Colin Young and Emma Boster of a band called Dying Wish.
Right.
Who you should check out. Like, if you like the kind of the old school, like, chuggy metalcore, but with the cleaner choruses.
Mm-hmm. Reminds me a bit of Nightwish.
Yeah, and she's got, like, there's, like, some Gothenburg, like, In Flamesy guitar harmonies and stuff in there. So they're worth checking out to anyone listening as well. Mm-hmm. And also, you should check out Colin's bands, God's Hate and Twitching Tongues. Bands everywhere. They're all good. But, yeah, the music. Like, I like the tone of the music because it sounds quite sad.
Yeah.
Like, it's like this... She has been corrupted, and it's sad, and it's not nice, and it fits the vibe perfectly, because then you got Brody coming down to be harder, and it's like this bludgeon, and hers is quite mournful. It's a really cool mix.
Honestly, I was watching her, it would have been after, was Full Gear the most recent pay-per-view?
Yeah.
There was this press scrum after that, and she was talking about how it was her idea to do all the House of Black stuff, because the cheerleader thing wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
And it does feel like it's very authored on her side. Like you said, there's that tragedy element to it, but her look is incredible. She's one of the first characters that I downloaded on WWE 2K23, and there are some really good fan community versions of her.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, overall, she's awesome. The Swerve and Hangman thing, Hangman's by far my favorite. I don't know who's your favorite wrestler. Mine's the Hangman by far.
Tomohiro Ishii.
Right.
But in AEW, depending on what side of the bed I wake up on, John Moxley or Eddie Kingston.
Yep. Yeah, mine's always Kingston or Hangman.
Yeah.
I'm starting to love Swerve, though. Like, I'm loving this weird, Joker-infused version of him, where, the version that we got, obviously, the Blood and Guts match thing that he did with Hangman, Texas Deathmatch. Was incredible. And then they've done a really cool spin-off of that where, like, on their Instagram and then on Swerve's most recent promo, which I think is only online for now, where they're talking about being, like, immortal rivals. And they did it straight after the match where, like, they both tweeted something or posted something where they were like, oh, we're both part of each other now because of how much blood they shared or whatever. Yeah. And Swerve mentioned it again on his most recent thing where he was like, oh, Hangman drank my blood and now, like, I'm part of him forever. And I was like, I like this idea of this crazy, like, you know, like super heroic rivalry, these two titans fighting
this thing forever.
Yeah, like a Batman Joker thing, which I forget which interview Swerve was doing. It might have been with Sports Insider or whatever, where he was talking about his influences and he mentioned Joker and he mentioned a few different characters.
Yeah.
And I was like, they're all coming through. But I love that stuff. What do you think of Swerve v Hangman?
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Where'd you come down on, like, the blood and gut stuff? Because, like, that, I didn't even realize that was a controversial talking point.
I think it's really cool.
Yeah, that's really cool too.
I think a guy drinking another guy's blood is cool.
It made me think of, like, because watching it in real time, like watching that match. And for people who don't know, two dudes fought each other. One guy broke into the other guy's house in fake kayfabe stuff. And then to get back at him, the dude took the pictures from his fridge and stapled them to the guy's face and was like, oh, if you want to come into my house, here's my stuff. And then dude started bleeding. And that guy then drank the blood and spat it out. And it was fun. That all reminded me of like a Mortal Kombat fatality. Like when you look at the cadence of a fatality, bang, 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 crazy, guts, disgusting thing, and then finisher. And it was like a real life Mortal Kombat fatality, and like I was like, this is gnarly AF. Yeah. Like, it's awesome.
I think, like, there's a lot of people who, because for years WWE was the monopoly and the only thing on TV in America or on mainstream TV in America, a lot of people are predisposed to not enjoying that style of wrestling. I think, and which is their right. You don't have to like it, it's fine. We can all like different things, but that you also get a lot of disingenuous stuff as well, particularly in social media circles where immediately if someone bleeds or whatever, it's, oh, it's garbage wrestling, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, we can respectfully disagree on things. We don't have to be assholes.
But it was such a weird thing coming out of it because, like, I remember watching that match and just like, and after that moment being like, oh my God, that gets to me so much. Yeah. Like, it really works. But I was like, to me, the whole thing is like, and not to make it a wrestling pod necessarily, but like, it's, I love the performance art side of it. Yeah. I love giving yourself to a performance that much in being in the moment. You got the crowd, it's all televised. Like, there was something about that specific, the fact that they went that far and pulled it off, that really worked, where I was like, if the core word at the heart of wrestling is belief, then like, I'm in it. Like, I don't know who's gonna win that match. It's just gone way past a line that I didn't even know existed, and I loved the artistry of it. So like, I loved how far that went, and I remember looking online after that and then seeing one of the top comments on the AEW official post on Twitter was like, oh, this isn't wrestling. And I was like, what do you mean? What do you want? Like, surely the core thing is belief.
Like, I hate that stuff, like, this isn't wrestling, because like, this aspects of wrestling that I don't enjoy. Like, I don't enjoy, like, a lot of the comedy.
I was gonna say the skit stuff sucks.
Yeah, a lot of skit-based things. But, like, to say it isn't wrestling is just silly.
But surely it can be everything.
Yeah, it's like listening to, like, a rap album and going, this isn't music.
Yeah.
Or like, a metal album and saying, this is just noise or whatever. You know, that's idiocy.
Like, I think over time, they'll only be proven wrong. Like, it can be everything.
It can be whatever you want it to be. You just don't have to like every flavor of it. You know?
I think it's, like, a conviction thing as well. Like, they committed to it so strong. It wasn't like it was just two dudes in a backyard cutting each other until someone looks or whatever. Yeah. Like, it had a lot more to it. Question from Stephen McCormack, who says, congrats on the big news, Mr. Tilford. Well, thank you very much. Hey. Question on replayability. For instance, after 100 hours to get through Cyberpunk or seeing 100% of Spider-Man 2 on one playthrough, I have no motivation left to dive back in. What gets you guys to revisit finished games?
Time more than anything else. Like, I'm not the kind of person who has to 100% everything. I think I usually like start a game with the intent of doing as much as possible. But if I'm with it for 60, 70, 80 hours, I usually tail off and then just do the essential stuff towards the end. So like, yeah, I'm the same. Like, I can't just dive in and do another playthrough straight away. I need a bit of time. I need to go and try some other things and come back. There's never a motivation to collect trophies or anything like that with me. I've gotten quite casual over the years. Honestly, time and distance. Once I've completed something, is usually quite a while.
Mine's like, I don't know when the last time was that I replayed a game in full. It's mainly because of the job. Like, I want to play as much stuff as possible. But if I'm finishing something, it's on to the next thing. And especially this year has been ludicrous. Like, I totted everything up. I was debating doing a video where I just lock myself in a room and talk about everything until it's done. It'll be like an hour long or something. But there's been about 60 games this year that I played. I finished about 35 of them. Nice. And like, that's like, to me, that's respectable enough. And but that's one of those things where it was like, you finish one thing, you're into the next thing, and enjoying all of it. But like, I never have the time to go back through another thing unless it feels like replaying it is fundamentally part of the overall progression. Yeah. Like if you unlock something at the end that feeds into the next playthrough, like Starfield does that really well, not to get specific about the spoilers, but the end of that game is also the start in a really, really cool way. And things like that where I'm like, oh, I need to see what happens next.
Is it Nier Automata where you have to like complete it like four times?
Yeah, like three. Like, yeah, you get a different character each time, and you don't really fully get the story until you've done the third playthrough, which is a pain because that middle playthrough I thought sucked. Like, I didn't like playing as A2 or whatever, because you have that weird little mini game that kicks in every time you want to fight an enemy, and I was like, oh my god, I'm fighting hundreds of enemies, I gotta do the same thing over and over again. And that whole structure of that though is like something to be experimented with. Like, the idea of replayability is something that can be is rarely done well. Like, nine times out of ten either people don't finish at all, and like Baldur's Gate 3, it has like a 10% completion rate right now
because it's so huge.
And just like, and it's a weird thing because it's more of a PC game than a console game in terms of the UI and everything else. But like Red Dead 2, like that game notoriously was barely finished by people, which is like fair enough. You would be in like the 70% that didn't finish it, which is like fair enough. Question from the other Dan who says, hello lads, hope you're doing well. Is it superhero fatigue or is it the KO punch of streaming platforms? Well, we stuck by Marvel, the last few have been meh, and many would now rather wait for it on Disney Plus after about a month. Has the pandemic industry saver now killed cinema?
Ooh.
For everyone listening to this, that just took me about 10 tries, but I'm going to edit that out. So all you'll hear is me nailing that question, but don't worry about it.
Be a hell of a blooper reel at some point.
Actually, shout out to the blooper reel that we have coming up over the Christmas holidays. Yeah. Our own editor, Dan Durkin, putting together every mistake every presenter has ever done across the
rascal. He's a rascal. Him.
I told him to do it, but it's going to be a thing to see.
He's going to do some mischief with that.
Yeah, what do you think about like the whole new release thing? I find myself now actually waiting to watch stuff at home, either because I don't trust the people in the cinema to not just shut the F up and let me watch the movie, or it's just cheaper. Like, it's either £14 each to just watch a movie, or if you're home premiere it, you can split it.
Yeah, this is it. Like, that cost is certainly a big a big consideration for me in particular. Like, if you want to go to, so you can go to the View Cinema here in Gateshead for £5, £4.99 every time, and that's usually what I do because it's cheap and it's right beside my house.
Is that only certain days, or is that always a fiver?
No, it's always a fiver.
What?
As long as you book it.
Oh, cool.
If you go there on the day, I think it's like £6 or £7, but it's still quite cheap.
Okay.
Whereas if you want to go to like the Art House Cinema in town, which is the Tyne side, Tyne House. If you go there, you're looking at spending like £12.
Well, I was going to say, there's like where I live, there's an Odeon, and the Odeon's about £12, £13. Yeah, like, five sounds like a dream.
It's a ripoff. Yeah. Like, and then if you want some popcorn, which I do because I'm a pig,
same.
You're spending £20 randomly on a Saturday to watch a movie that you could wait a month for. So there's definitely that. There's cost of living. There is oversaturation because you have everything at your fingertips at home. I think definitely superhero fatigue is a thing because they dominated the cinemas for so long. And for me, those kind of started going off the rails after like Infinity War.
Because I remember back when everything was first rolling out, like back in 2017, 2018, or maybe a bit earlier, when Civil War was happening, the big Marvel tentpole
the
stuff.
Big boys.
I remember at the time you were like, I'm not into every single one of these. Like, and it, you were already kind of feeling it. And then you've only been proven right. Like, I mean, the amount that they then tipped the bucket out when like for the TV show is like, I'm right with you where I'm just sick of it all.
Yeah, and it's like, you look at like the origin films to introduce characters, and everyone was copy paste with a different, slightly different flavor. Like, you could take the three acts, piece them together from each one, and they'd be identical to each other. And it was like, and then the moment they killed off half their cast in Infinity War, which I thought was like a really bold plot move, and then they just brought them straight back. I was like, my God. I know they eventually, you know, Iron Man died and everything eventually, but it was like, you've removed the fangs from this now.
Right.
There's no stakes. I can't watch this. But yeah, in terms of cinema in general, the experience of going there and people talking and stuff, that's getting worse.
Oh yeah.
I feel for sure.
People like want to do, they're on their phones, they're filming themselves. Yeah. I just sound really old, but I'm also like, nah, it's the reality of it. Like, you're not the main character here.
Exactly. I'm there to be lost in this sensory overload of the giant screen and the good audio, not the rustling of your sweets in the hall. Look at this TikTok on my phone. It's like, no, be respectful of other people. And to be fair, the cinema staff need to crack down on that stuff as well, because like, maybe it was okay. Like, and shout out to all the people out there who are like working in cinemas, trying their best, right? I'm not criticizing them. Their bosses need to implement some better protocols here. There needs to be more of a system where these things are monitored and that behavior is stamped out, because back in, like, now no one has an attention span. Everyone's on their phone every 5 minutes. It's like, it wasn't the same 20 years ago, obviously, or even 5 years ago. And I feel like the pandemic era accelerated a lot of behaviors in people. This is one of them. People just need to be respectful and like, Nine times out of ten now, I'm staying in my house. Yeah. I'm turning the heating up. I'm sitting on my sofa. It's nice and comfy.
Got your own food.
Yeah, there's nobody annoying us. Like, I can have just like a nice beer out of the fridge.
You can pause it whenever you want.
Yeah, like go to the bathroom is fine.
Because it's like, it's such a toss up of like trying to like balance the scales of like all those positives versus like, well, it's a bigger screen. Yeah. And it's like more, like I said, it's more of a sensory overload. And sometimes it's an event movie. Like, yeah. I feel like the Barbenheimer stuff got everybody out this year.
I like stuff like that where it's an occasion.
Yeah. But it's like, but there is, for me, like it's not entirely undone, but it is massively affected by some rude person in that cinema. And yeah. Nine times out of ten now, when I think about seeing something in the cinema, I think like, okay, I want to see that. And I'm immediately, my brain immediately serves up the thought of, it's a roll of the dice whether I get a decent audience or not.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, I'm watching stuff at like 9 p.m. I'm going for the last screening so I can avoid people.
Yeah.
Or I'm looking to see what the most empty screen is possible. Like, I would take like a proper like draconian rule cinema where like someone talks and then like a light comes out of nowhere and shines on them.
Yeah.
And just sort of says that, well, you have like one chance or something.
I agree. You should be thrown out. If you're using your phone, if you're sitting there scrolling or on WhatsApp or whatever, you should be thrown out. Yeah. One strike, warning, and then you're gone.
Because like, we've done, like, my wife used to work in a cinema, and so she, like, had the other side of it, where it's like, you're trying to, go up to people and tell them, can you please be quiet, and things like that.
Yeah.
And so, like, it depends.
I get it,
But it depends per chain and per person you're talking to, how much of a reaction you think you're going to get. But more recently, like, we had an altercation a couple of weeks ago where these two people just wouldn't shut up.
Yeah.
And we went and just said to one of the ushers who was already standing there, like, hey, you know, they've been pretty disruptive.
Yeah.
Kind of just want to watch the movie. And then they were like, okay, cool. Like, we'll keep an eye on them. And then they just kind of stood on the front side of the cinema and just kind of watched them for a bit.
Yeah.
They kept talking, nothing happened. Then the person left and I was like, okay, well, I guess we're just stuck with them then.
Yeah.
Like, what are you supposed to do with it than escalating it directly to the person?
Yeah, this
and
is
it also, it feels like you're telling the teacher to help with the problem or whatever. And you can't shush people, which did eventually get them to shut up. But like, I just hate having to go through that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it's like, it's not your position to do that, is it? And it's like, yeah, there just needs to be more protocols in place to stop people being assholes, basically. Just have some respect.
Yeah, and I think like the overall thing is interesting in terms of how much like streaming has affected box office and stuff like that. Because the Five Nights at Freddy's movie, which is blowing up right now. I haven't played Five Nights at Freddy's. Well, I've seen a tiny bit of it. Anyway, that movie is apparently like doing gangbusters at the cinema and at home release. It released simultaneously.
Oh, okay.
And it's done both. And I wonder whether giving people the option from the start is the way forward.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that like overall still helps, because during the pandemic, it was like, you can do a home release, but it's going to be like £30 or £40 or something.
Yeah.
And then eventually that's gone down to like 12 or 14 to try and mimic like a ticket price. But I don't know, there's something about like giving us the option to just watch it at home. But then there's enough of people who want to have the big event thing. It's like trying to cater to both. Like ultimately we want to support the movie that we're interested in. So I think, to me at least, one of the ways forward would be both.
Definitely.
But I do think if everything was offered day and date at home, I might not ever go to the cinema again.
Yeah, I agree. It's just too comfortable.
Yeah.
It's too comfortable.
Speaking of being too comfortable, this has been the UBP, the Entitled Partner Podcast. I've been Scott Tailford. That's been Andy Murray.
What a fun time this was. I really enjoyed this.
A lovely little time.
Thanks
you
for
again.
Having me.
Genuinely for popping in. And thank all of you for sending in your various questions. And have a lovely weekend. We'll catch you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.